accession number 24192, reel 17.
Mr. Taylor, reel 17. Now, how long were you up on the border for?
About 7 weeks with A Company, and then I moved back.
Now, there'd been no particular incident on the board, had there?
Not particularly, nothing in particular.
So where did you move back to?
We moved back into Aden itself. I can't recall the name of the camp, actually. Anyway, I moved back with A Company and then went to B Company as back at CQMS,
B Company. What did that involve, being CQMS of B Company?
I was responsible for all the accommodation, all the stores, the issuing, the returns, the drawing kit from the quartermasters for any personnel within the company, everything that pertained to the support of the company, I was responsible for.
Now, could you go through each of those things in a bit more detail?
If a person, for instance, had to exchange clothing, which include boots and anything like that, they would come to me and I would then either take the kit off them or have a look at it and say yes or no. I would then go to the, if it was necessary to exchange, then I would go to the quartermaster and take the stuff, get it all together, say X number of boots or X number of suits. Our case was the olive green uniform, which we were wearing at the time. Take it to the quartermaster, get it exchanged, bring it back to the company and reissue to the person requiring it. The stores itself, it's a fairly big store. You had everything, including all the shovels, picks and weapons, the armoury, responsible for that as well. The issue of weapons every day, the person had his own rifle, had his own disc, he brought his rifle in, took the disc, gave him the disc, he carried that around with him. When he wanted to draw his rifle out again, he'd bring the disc, issue the rifle, and put the disc in the space that the rifle had been taken from. All this was down in a book anyway, so just by looking at the book, you could tell who was responsible for that particular rifle by looking at the disc number. And this is the way that we used to issue it. Same with the LMG, and any other weapons were done in exactly the same way. The bedding, mattresses, blankets and everything were in fact, we didn't stock them in the stores as such, but they were all in the accommodation. But if any needed changing, then we do the same thing as we would for clothing and anything else like that. That's sort of roughly the setup. How it worked. I was responsible for everything that went in and out of the, either by signature or by exchange and one-for-one exchange through the quartermaster.
Did you enjoy the work? I mean, you'd done something like that before with your staff side, but did you enjoy it?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did. You got to know everybody, you knew everybody in the company, and you knew the people who would try it on a little bit for a new set of kit or something like this. Yeah, I did enjoy it. Yeah.
Were there any problems avoiding fraud and stealing and things, either amongst your staff or amongst the men?
I never encountered any, personally. I never heard of anything within the barrack rooms or anything like that, or stealing other people's kit. Probably somewhere along the line they purloined something from somewhere, but they kept them to themselves. And
Now, what was it like in Aden itself?
Hot, very hot. The civilian population weren't very happy with us at that time.
How did that show itself? How did you get
on? Well, we used to do, I didn't do it as regularly as the other people, but I had night patrols down through a place called Marla, MALLA. And we used to go down there and there was a curfew on. So if anybody after curfew would take them in or stop any vehicles and search the vehicles and this sort of thing, because they were firing rocket launchers and that sort of thing into the blocks, because a lot of the married quarters, or people, married people, were living down in Marla. So this was the idea of the patrols at night.
What was a typical Marla night patrol like, or curfew patrol?
You'd go out around about, I think around about 11 o'clock at night. I think the patrol was roughly about 10. You'll go down and start your patrol just sort of, what we say, north of Marla, and then patrol down through the main street, round through the coochie huts and all that sort of thing, where they used to live through that night, and run anybody in who were out after curfew. We'd go through everything. You had your areas on the map. You would go through, been told to do, cover such an area, and somebody with another patrol would go and cover that particular area. So you had more than one patrol out at night. You had your own passwords and that sort of thing if you met up with other patrols. And that used to last. We used to be back in about 3 o'clock in the morning.
So just about four hours.
About 4 hours. Yeah.
And did anything particular ever happen, or was it a routine affair when you did it?
It was a routine affair. Very much like the Cyprus one that I mentioned earlier. You had your area to patrol, and that's it. And there was, as far as I can remember, I think we did get stormed once on the... we had barriers over the Land Rover and that sort of thing, so you couldn't get too badly hit. You had all your kit on anyway, so it didn't matter too much. But other than that, it was fairly routine.
Now, what about your living accommodation? What was that like?
Living accommodation was quite good, actually. It was a sort of brick and wooden building, two-story buildings, a veranda all the way along, with barrack rooms running off into the toilets, washrooms, and barrack rooms. It all ran off the veranda on each side of the block. That was good. It was good accommodation.
Now, could you go out into Aden on your own, or in twos, or was that not possible?
Yeah, you could go out in daylight, yeah. You could go out and shop, go to the shops or anything like that. Yeah. I lived in a place called Crater, which was, as it says, it was a crater from the old volcano. And Crater itself, they built the town in the crater itself. And I lived down there for a while. And
That was not in the barracks? And
that was not in the barracks itself, no. Now,
what were we living in there? Was that just sort of...
It was an apartment. I could see Crater Prison from my house. I sort of overlooked the prison. I was there for probably 3 or 4 months before I moved up into the cantonment at Camaxa, outside the airfield, which was...
You were a bit vulnerable.
Yeah, we were.
Were you on your own, or...?
Well, the family were there. I had my family with me. Yeah. And the children used to go to school with and bus with armed escort. There it wasn't, it didn't seem quite so open down there as it was in Marla, where people could sort of get to you. Although the rocks on either side were fairly high, there never seemed to be that much problem in Crater as there was initially anyway, as there was in Marla. And I stayed there for about 4 months, I think, and we moved then into quarters up at Camaxa, just outside the Camaxa, which was like a cantonment for the married families of our battalion and different other units were also in the area as well. We had a Nafi and where you could shop, so you didn't have to go out quite so much into the town. Some of the things, while we were in Crater, if you went to the local shops, you had to be very careful what you bought. So the cereal in it had the weevils, so you had to put it all in the water and took the weevils off the top before you ate anything that had been standing around. But the old Arabs used to come around and sell fish, fresh fish. And then round the door, or sell different things to the door, and they were quite good.
So how did you get on with the Arabs individually?
We not far from sort of down from the at the bottom end of where I lived. You had a building building set up, building works, and the Arabs, they were very good. The children used to play in the area, and they were very good with the children anyway. And I remember coming back, I think, from up country one afternoon, and I saw an Arab, and there were two little heads in the water, and they were fishing with this Arab. And they were my sons, fishing with his Arabs down at Fisherman's Point, not far from where I live. They were good. They liked like children. And overall, I think, you always had a feeling that there was somebody in there who might do something to you, take a pot shot at you, but in the main, I think they were quite good, especially in the shops, of course, they wanted your business anyway. So there was no problem there.
So what happened next?
We left. We left Aden as a battalion.
Now, when was that?
September 1965.
Now, what do you remember of the departure?
It was fairly well organised, because you had to get all your kit packed, your MFO boxes packed, down to a point in the barrack square, which had taken away and loaded on a ship, I think. They went by ship in those days. And we went direct from the quarter to the airport, which was about less than half a mile from where we lived to the airport. And we flew back on I think it was a Britannia aircraft. It took about 24 hours anyway. I think we landed at Bahrain to refuel. Remember that. And had about 3 hours there at Bahrain. And then flew on to Heathrow. We were going to Stansted, I think. But because of the weather, we were diverted to Heathrow. And I stayed for a couple of weeks in the Union Jet Club with the family, because I knew that I was going out on the advance party to Germany, where we were being posted to, in Celle.
Where is it?
Celle. Celle. And we left. We stayed in a sort of shop, cinema, took the children around in different places in London for a couple of weeks. And then we flew out to Germany.
So that would be October?
That's end of October, yeah.
Landed what was your role with the advance party?
The idea was to assist in taking over quarters. We were relieving the Royal Irish Fusiliers at that time. And I had was designated to a barrack officer who was a German. And we would go around and take over the quarters from the... We had an area to do, and other people had other areas to do. Take over the quarters from the Royal Irish Fusiliers. And took...
What were you looking for? Why was there a fuss about
it? Well, the thing was that you had in my quarters, you had a ledger, which... In those days, you got issued with everything, down to the dustpan and brush. And everything had to be laid out for inspection or for check, as per the register, if they were short of items and they had charged for them. If the furniture was badly damaged, that's what they had to pay. Same with the furniture, the house, the doors, everything, if that was damaged. So we came across quite a few horrendous setups, really. I remember one, whether he'd been out the night before or a couple of nights before, he'd kicked the door in because his wife had locked him out or something, this sort of thing. There were horrendous bills some of them had to pay when they left. Normally, in some situations, you would have what they call a pre-march out, so a month before you were due to march out of the quarter, people would go around, the barrack people would go around and check and try and replace the furniture for the incoming occupant. But in lots of cases, it doesn't happen because there's too many people moving at one time. But that done, and the battalion moved.
Any other jobs for the Advance Party? Was that your main job?
That was my main job. Of course, I had to take over the stores as well from the
What were you looking for there?
Well, again, same sort of thing. Check everything, that's in the stores, everything that was on issue to everything that was on issue to the personnel within the company, everything that was in the stores should tally. So we had a total at the end of it. If there were any discrepancies, then they were noted, and the battalion had to make it up either. Make it up, or the CQMS had to pay for those particular items, and that went. They went quite well. The takeover in my particular company, anyway, and one or two items, small items, which were missing, but didn't tally. But other than that, it was quite a good takeover in the company.
Now, what was your accommodation like at Sal?
I had a brand new flat. In fact, the day I moved in, the electricians moved out. They'd just finished. So it was brand new. The flat, first floor flat.
Did you choose that, or was it assigned to
you? No, that was assigned to me. Yeah, I was on the second floor. The bandmaster was on the ground floor beneath me. And I think that, yeah, they were only two-story blocks in this particular area. So there was just the bandmaster at one end of the block, so that was quite good. It was nice, good accommodation, excellent accommodation. As I said before, we had everything, or most things, issued, not like you do nowadays, where you can take your own stuff in and use your own furniture, your own cutlery, and everything. Everything was issued. So, as I said before, you had to take over everything and sign for everything, and you had your register and of all the kit that was in the house, all the bits and pieces. Everything you want to use was there, actually. I think the battalion moved in just before Christmas. The whole battalion arrived just before Christmas, I think. What I can remember, yeah.
And were they in the barracks at Sella, I presume?
They're in the barracks at Sella. Name of the barracks was. The name escapes me at the moment. I'm not good, very good for remembering names.
Okay.
That was good accommodation. The old German barracks again, which is pretty good accommodation. Very good accommodation.
Now you were still B Company CQMS.
I was still B Company CQMS. Yeah. Then as the battalion got settled in, of course we had to then get on with the exercises, and we became mechanised again with the APCs. The armoured personnel carriers. So each company were allocated. I think we used to have eight or nine.
Which ones did you have? What made? What type were they?
It was Mark III, I think they were at that time.
And did they have a name? Or did
it no, it was just it was named as an APC.
Mark III APC.
Yeah, Mark III APC. Yeah.
What were they like? I think we mentioned them before.
We had you had your driver, you had your commanders, and it carried, I think they carried 12 people with the weapons and on exercise. You could put the stuff on the top, any rations or that sort of thing, or any Hessian camouflage nets and all this sort of thing. So you kept everything clear inside for the personnel itself. But you could stack the stuff on the top of the APC. We also had the what they call a stalwart. It was an amphibious type vehicle, quite a big vehicle. It had six wheels. I think it was six wheels. All the exhaust would come run out of the back when you put it in the river or swam it across the river. Then of course it wouldn't get it blown up. That was quite good. That was a good vehicle. I had that. I used one of those. He used to carry the stores around and had a driver in for the exercise. Because in those days, the company was split up on this particularly training that we were doing, and you would go right out at night to the other platoons around from the company and replenish them with fuel. You had a sergeant allocated to the company who would look after the fuel, so you went out with him, and I had a Land Rover as well, so he would take out the stalwart with the fuel on board, and I'd go out in my Land Rover with him to the different positions and get back. You do this at night, normally, and then you bring it back and join the HQ area at probably about 2 o'clock in the morning, and that's the way you used to go on from. Most of the rations, I didn't have to issue any rations except initially at the start of the exercise, and they each platoon were given the ration for that particular time that we'd be out there on the exercise, so they'd take everything with them, and if it went on any longer, then you'd have to get some more and take it out to them, but initially they were given rations for a specific period, and so rations, once they'd got them, that was it. That's one worry away, really. This was the sort of thing that that you sort of did all the time with it, and you move forward and back with the tactics that were going on at the time. And we had worked with the tanks, because at that time we were also doing. You put a platoon on the top of a tank, and you take them forward. So you had a section on either side of the turret, and a section at the back. And the platoon commander and the platoon sergeant would stand behind the turret, in contact with the tank commander, and he would say, "We've got to go there. We've got to go there to go forward." And then they had a specific way of dismounting. Section going off each side and one off the back, and you immediately went out. And the tank either came back or went forward. So this is the sort of thing that we were doing at the time. That went, normally the exercise took probably 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks or something like that at that time.
Where were they done? Which training ground?
Lunenburg, Soltau. I think they were the only area we went to, actually, from Sella, and then on return from exercise, of course, everything had to be cleaned, all the sleeping bags and everything that had to be cleaned again for reuse at a later date. All the vehicles had to be cleaned, everything checked, the tools all had to be handed in. We had a special storeroom for all the tools from the from the vehicles. All the weapons had to be checked, and it was quite a sort of hard time getting into the swing of it, getting back into after being in Aden, places like that. And then I was made warrant officer, and I took over weapon training, the Carter, the NCO Carter. Training NCOs, junior NCOs, Lance Corporals and Corporals, on drill, drill weapon training, tactics.
Now you were promoted to, were you promoted for that?
Yeah.
To
WO2, yeah. And I went to HQ Company and took over as weapon training warrant officer. The card used the last. We had our own area, own accommodation for the Carter. So you were responsible as soon as the private soldiers who were being made Lance Corporal, or, and the Lance Corporal to Corporals, had their own accommodation. So you had control over them all the time. I'd probably take them on, depending on the training program. I'd probably do drill initially in the first thing in the morning. Then we'd go on to the weapon training, and they'd do the PE as well. And depending on the training program, we might go out and do an exercise for 2 days. And this sort of thing, this is sort of set up that throughout 6-week course. That went on for, it would now be coming up till 60, end of 67. And I was coming to the end of my army career.
Can I just ask, what about the quality of the men on the Kada? I mean, were they good lads?
Good. They're very good, yeah. I had some... They really wanted to do it. They weren't sort of pushed into it. You were going on the car. They wanted to do it. So it was quite easy to. They were always up for it, always for everything. Weapon training, drill, the PE. Never. I can't remember having any problem with any of them actually, and they were good.
Now, but, as you were coming to the end of your time at the back end of 67. How did you feel? What were your plans?
Asked to go on extended service, which would take me through for the next 3 years, I think, after that. And the adjutant called me in one day and said there was a job going in Holland. Did I want it? He didn't know what it was. He'd heard from records that they wanted somebody at the this particular place in Holland. He said, well, take a few days off, go down and find out what it is. So I went to my car and drove down to Holland from Celle. Met up with the support group of the Allied Forces of Central Europe at Brunsum in Holland, and met the RSM, who told me that I wasn't going to work there, I was going to work in Maastricht. Barracks there, so I went over and met the who was going to be my boss, my immediate boss. So I was in the headquarters at Brunsum, a British major, but my boss on the ground was going to be a Dutch major, Major Gitz. I always remember Major Gitz. And so I went over and met him, and he explained what the job was going to be. I was going to be camp sergeant major, and I was going to be responsible for everything that happened, everything that came into the camp. I was responsible for everything.
Which camp? The camp of...
It was called Tapijn. T-A-P-I-J-N. Tapijn Caserne, Maastricht.
And this was a camp of the...
This was a NATO. It was a NATO setup, NATO camp. And in there were a company of Americans, a company of Germans, a squadron of signals, Royal Signals. You had the odd Belgians and Dutch who were worked on the microwave setup, which would go out when there was a big exercise on. They would go out with the microwaves and radar setups, and that's the sort of setup it was within the with the signals and everybody within the camp. The Americans, the Germans, they were all part of it. They all technicians and this sort of thing. You had a club, an international club within the camp,